Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, it is the week of the Open Championship, the 145th Open Championship, Golf's oldest. And golf's oldest major, golf's greatest major, grandest major in some people's eyes, cherished major. Depends what side of the pond you are from. We will be joined on this radio program by our friend, colleague, Mr. Ryan Ballinger, to preview 145th Open Championship, which can be seen for the first time on Golf Channel on NBC beginning tomorrow night at 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time. 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time. From first ball to last ball. Lots of golf on the networks of NBC Universal. We welcome in our friend from Golf News Net and the Yahoo Sports Double Ball Golf Blog, Mr. Ryan Ballinger. Hello, sir.
Hey, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm good. Will you be up at 1:30 a.m. Tomorrow night?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'll probably be up by 3:30. I'll try to my best to stay up until 1:30. Oh. But, with two kids and one being 3 months old, usually by about 9 o'clock, I'm shot. So,
it is my responsibility. It is written into my show that I must ask the hardest question first, and as a result, I must ask you up front. Sorry, up front on the scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most. How excited are you to hear the new version of Yanni's In Celebration of Man?
I'm curious how he's going to change it. So, I like the song, so I'll say 8. I'm really curious if they're going to add some kind of bagpipe or what they're going to do to it to make it, sound Scottish and, the British Open. So I am very interested to hear it, but I'm glad to hear that it's back.
They are adding bagpipes. They got the guy from Braveheart and Titanic to do the work for them.
Yeah, nice. That might be a little bit of a tearjerker.
What?
That might be a little bit of a tearjerker then if they do the Titanic style. Geez, that can.
Hey, I mean, look, the 145th Open Championship ended up with Jason Day in tears. 144th ended up with Jason Day in tears. So it would not be shocking to have tears conclude at the 145th.
This is true. This is a big deal. So this is cool for Golf Channel, former employee there. It's neat to see that they have finally earned the opportunity to broadcast a men's major championship for all the hard work that they do and how much they've improved in the last really 20 years, but especially the last 4 or 5. It's cool to see.
And they've got 4,000 announcers over there. They've got 2 production teams over there. They've got a lot of people to make this work, starting with Mike Tirico at 1:30 sharp, at the stroke of 1:30. Wednesday night, and he will immediately hand it off to Dan and Johnny. So the passing of the torch from Mike to Dan and Johnny will happen literally seconds into their reign hosting this event, which is really cool. So I don't know about you, but I'm really pumped for the Olympics. I'm really pumped for golf in the Olympics. And obviously you'll be on this show on August the 8th to talk about it, but I really am sick of hearing about golf in the Olympics this week. So I'm not going to ask you about Mr. Spieth's comments or Mr. McIlroy's comments. I'm going to ask you this question because I frankly just want to talk about this week, and I'm sick of talking about golf in the Olympics for the moment. Do you think anybody's comments, whether it's Rory's today, whether it's Jordan's today, will have any impact on their play this week? Because it is, because you cannot deny that for the moment they are the top story this week, and for the moment most of the reaction to what they've said, and especially in terms of Spieth saying no and then Rory's comments say have been negative. I hope it doesn't affect them this week because this is a major and this is a big event, and I just hope that they can put this beside them.
I think maybe more Rory than Jordan. I think Jordan gave some serious consideration to this. It seemed like he was, I mean, unless he was Hollywooding it today, which I don't know that he necessarily does, but if he did, then that's a shame. But I don't think he was faking the dilemma that he faced. I mean, he signed on with Coca-Cola, which is big with the Olympics. He appeared in commercials for Under Armour and NBC heavily pimping out that golf's going to be back in the Olympics, and then obviously backed out in the end. He didn't say what his health concern is, but he seemed pretty convinced that it's important to him. So I think he's upset that he made this decision, but he feels that he made the right one. Rory, on the other hand, does not seem to feel particularly vindicated by the public reaction to his decision not to play. I think that he probably came out swinging today, and that's why he said some of the things that he did and the tone that he did. And I don't necessarily think that what he said would be disagreed upon by even a small percentage of his peers. But I think he felt backed into a corner, forced to defend a decision that is becoming increasingly unpopular in golf circles. And he decided to respond how he typically does when backed into a corner, says something snarky, almost a little mean. And now the shift has been the top four players in the world are skipping the Olympics to Rory McIlroy took a dump on the Olympics, and he's got to deal with that for the rest of the week. And I don't think that's a distraction he needs when he's trying to win a fifth major championship, much less one that could be played in the wind. And that doesn't necessarily work to his favor either.
Yeah. All right, Dustin Johnson. We have not talked since Dustin's travails at Oakmont. I thought, and my take on this is that this was a mental barrier breaker for him, that much like Jason Day at the Canadian Open last year, much like Phil at Augusta in 04, much like, you know, many of these guys who need to kind of break through that wall, much like, you know, Congo was for Rory, that once they, you know, break through that mental barrier, then they're, you know, flying. And obviously Dustin got some help from Jason at Firestone to back into that victory in a sense. But for me, I thought, okay, this is Dustin basically saying, I'm here, there's nothing to stop me. And now he's been playing his baby fade all summer, which you would think in windy, wet conditions, roughs up, got to hit the ball well. I cannot see how you can't look at Dustin as a serious contender this week, partly because of the mental side of it and partly because his game's just on fire.
Yeah, he has all the tools to be able to play links golf well, and he's demonstrated that. He's been in contention. He almost won in 2011, arguably should have won in 2011 if he just kept that two iron in bounds. He has everything working for him here, especially on the front side. Going out, he's going to play two par fives that are easily reachable, one or two par fours that he can drive if he feels so inclined. So he has the opportunity each day to get out to a four or five under par start through six holes. That's got to be a big confidence boost for him. And then the matter is, how does he play the back nine? He's among one of the best players on the PGA Tour, I think top five in back nine scoring average. So he knows how to finish out rounds, and he knows how to stay strong, whatever the conditions are. I think that's the big challenge for him this week, is being able to adjust when the wind changes, you know, when you change direction. And he seems to have the mentality to do that. I don't think he should favor the high fade this week. I think that's what gets you in trouble in open golf, especially if it gets windy. You're kind of putting it up there without with more spin, and if it gets going the wrong way, it spins out the way. You know, that's a problem. He needs to be able to keep it a little bit lower this week and at times, especially what sounds like Friday and Saturday when the wind's supposed to come up. So if he can go to that shot, he can go to that well, and if he can do that reliably, and if the wind doesn't blow, he can play whatever he wants, then there's no reason for him to not be able to play well here. I think he also has the added benefit that Open Championship greens are slower than your week-to-week on the PGA Tour. So just like the fast greens at Oakmont probably bothered the guys a little bit because they were so fast, they're going to bother the guys a little bit this week because they're too slow. So the skill of putting is, again, a little bit mitigated, and I think that it helps Dustin Johnson, who has improved as a putter, but he's certainly not a world-class putter.
Thankfully for Mr. Spieth, the 16th hole at Firestone is not part of the 18 holes this week at Troon. He was first in strokes gained putting at Firestone, which I think got a little overlooked. He didn't hit the ball well, but he saved his rounds well. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, look, you need somebody to grind, be inventive, hang with it mentally. And Spieth obviously fits that bill. Do you think this is Jordan's week, or do you think that he's not exactly firing on all cylinders coming in, and thus you have your doubts?
Having the finish that he did, top five at Firestone, is certainly a good thing. It tells him he's a short game, and his game inside really 125 yards is in good shape. He wasn't anything particularly special up until that point in the golf course. Like you said, he led the field in strokes gained putting, so he's got that down pretty well. The more I see of Jordan Spieth, barring some big change in who he becomes over the next few years, I think his two best majors will be the Masters and the Open Championship, because they're the ones you can spray it around and still have a good chance to win. You don't need to necessarily hit fairways. I mean, you got to hit greens, but you don't necessarily have to hit fairways to either of those places to do all that well. And you do with the U.S. Open when it's a setup like Oakmont. He didn't when it was a setup like Chambers. So I think he has to have, you know, he's got to be licking his chops every time he comes to an Open Championship moving forward, because this is the championship that he can handle. It's the one where his mental toughness shines through. It's the one where his imagination shines through. It's the one where overanalysis can work. All of those things work to his favor. So while he may not be playing the best golf from tee to green, and it sounds like he doesn't feel that great about his ball striking, all told, this isn't a long golf course. If the wind doesn't blow excessively hard, it's not that bad for him. He should be able to get around and score. So I think he's flying a little under the radar here just because of what's happened with Dustin Johnson and Jason Day, but at least competitively. But I think that he's got as good a chance as anybody because of all the things he brings to the table.
When you're hot, you're hot. Just to finish up the Dustin Johnson point, he's first in front nine scoring average on the PGA Tour this year and fifth in back nine scoring average.
Yeah, and in my fantasy picks for this week, I emphasize the back nine scoring average just because it's the harder nine, and you're never going to play 10 first. So for these guys, you got to be able to handle effectively the last 10 holes really well, because number nine is going to rank up there in the top five hardest holes in the golf course. So you got to be able to play the last 10 really well. And if you look at those guys who are scoring the best on the back nine this year, it's no surprise that they're the best players on the PGA Tour. You got Jordan Spieth up there. You got Danny Willett up there. You've got Dustin Johnson up there. Jason Day's up there. All of those guys who are playing great golf because they know how to finish rounds. And that's going to be really critical this week, in my view.
We've got a unique streak in golf right now. Not too many people know it, but Scott Piercy likes finishing second to Dustin Johnson. So a two-part question. Number one, does Scott Piercy finish second this week? And number two, does Dustin Johnson finish first?
Well, you know, we've had that finish two in a row, as you said. But I like Scott Piercy in this championship. He's proven that he has the ability through the green to be able to play major championship caliber golf, major championship winning golf. Just been a little shy on two venues that were set up like major championships. Obviously, one was a major championship. I think he can contend, but I don't think he's a cinch second. I think it's more likely of those two scenarios, using the USGA's logic, more likely than not that Dustin Johnson will win before Scott Piercy finishes second. So, but then again, you look at the Open Championship in the last 5 years, and with the exception of Rory McIlroy in 2014, they're all kind of older guys who won: Darren Clark, Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson, Zach Johnson. So, I mean, Dustin Johnson's not old. He's, what, 32? And then you got Scott Piercy, who's a little bit older, maybe 35, 36. So if you had to guess between those two based on the age statistics, I guess I would look towards Scott Piercy. But I think you got to have someone who has Open Championship experience and who has that kind of imagination to be able to handle this style of golf. I think that's the person that's going to come through this week.
We've got Ryan Ballingy with us to preview the Open Championship, which begins on Golf Channel NBC tomorrow night at 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Troon hasn't hosted the Open in 12 years. It's been a while since Americans fans saw it. They know the postage stamp. If you've watched Golf Channel this week, you've kind of learned that the front nine usually plays downwind, back nine, second nine comes back into the wind. It's been wet. It's not going to be one of those firm, fast, hot, you know, Hoylake 06 links type scenarios. You got to drive it well. The greens are kind of small. What else, Ryan, should the fans out there know as they get ready to either A, lock in their picks, or B, kind of prepare themselves to sit down and watch a major championship?
I think you kind of nailed it with those last 2 points. It seems like it's not all that firm. It's firm, but not super firm, so you're going to get a run out. You're going to get a lot of guys who are going to have to make a choice to hit driver or lay back. And I have a feeling a lot of guys are going to hit driver this week. It just seems that the way the ball is carrying and that the lack of run out is going to encourage guys who are longer to take the risk. There's a lot of gorse on this golf course, so there will be plenty of opportunity for guys to prick themselves, take unplayable lies, have lost balls. There's going to be plenty of that. As you mentioned, these targets are fairly small relative to, especially what we see in this country, but even relative to the Open rotation, kind of the defense of the golf course, because otherwise there are some bunker issues, but they're not excessive and they're not weird like St. George's would be. There aren't a ton of blind shots. I mean, pretty well in front of you, relatively speaking, to the Open rotation. And you have just hole after hole after hole that feels the same. Just straight out, par four, par five that looks like a par four, plays like a par four, and you got to hit to a small target. I think there's going to be a lot of aggression this week, and I think there are going to be plenty of guys who can get in that 9, 10 under par range. So unlike some of the other Open venues, maybe like a Carnoustie, a Muirfield even, where the winning score could easily be 5 under par or less, I think this one is almost assuredly going to be 9, 10, 12 under par.
All right, so before we get into naming names and making picks, unfortunately, the way the golf world is right now, I must ask this question. Do you think we'll have a rules fiasco this week? And if so, will John Barrymore be the person at the center of it? It is really frustrating to me, Ryan, that we've now had two straight USGA championships that have been dogged by rules issues. And look, we can talk rules on another show because that's just a never-ending discussion. But it would be nice for a major to be remembered by who won it, because the Masters was and is still remembered by Spieth's collapse. The U.S. Open has Dustin, but has also got this rules issue. I hope that somebody goes out there and wins the darn thing, and we can remember and honor that and not have a rules fiasco to cloud it.
Would be nice. I don't know if we'll necessarily be spared that. It just depends on the wind, really. If it picks up on Friday and Saturday more than is expected, there's a chance to get balls oscillating. There's a chance that players could stomp their feet and say, oh, we need to stop play, blah, blah, like we did last year. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the most likely rule situation is if John Paramore gets a stick up his butt and decides to start filling out slow play warnings and penalties. And if the RNA did that, that would be something we haven't seen on the PGA Tour in, what, 26 years, other than Tian Lang at the Masters, what, 2 years ago. So, but not in a regular PGA Tour event. So they're few and far between. They're hard to come by. But I would think that is the most likely scenario. I mean, after seeing the final groups on Saturday and Sunday play 18 holes of the U.S. Open, albeit in difficult conditions, in 5 hours and change, I have a feeling that the RNA will not tolerate that kind of pace of play and that they will make it a point of emphasis.
I hope so, because that was interminable. And the 5:43, which the women did this past Sunday in threesomes, was just ridiculous. All right. Every year at the Open Championship, there is who I call the mysterious European. That is the European Tour member who comes up in the leaderboard, hangs out for a while, and is a complete mystery to American audiences because they don't play the PGA Tour and don't usually rise up and do that. For me, I've got three names for you. We've got Alex Noren, who won last week in Scotland, so he's obviously coming in off good form. We've got my international sleeper from the U.S. Open, Matthew Fitzpatrick, who's been on good form. And I just forgot the third. I will think of that momentarily. And then there's also Matteo Manassero, who has kind of come back out of just nowhere to have a victory, and just today got named to the Italian Olympic team. Those three guys, I think, are legitimate names to be that mysterious European.
Sure. I like those names. I think the other one that might have been familiar to people because of last weekend is Tyrrell Hatton. He's a British player. He's a young guy in his late 20s. He's played some really, really good golf this year on the European Tour. He's played especially well of late, and his finish at the Scottish Open is what got him in to this week. So I like him a lot because he's just kind of that guy who's just rolling in good form. So if I was going to pick someone that's a European player that would be completely unfamiliar to American folks, by and large, I would say he's my guy.
This week, this major, and my player who has absolutely zero chance to win, it is Charles Schwartzel. Golf Digest reported today that he has switched to PXG clubs and has done it days before a major. You and I both know, Ryan, that may be the biggest no-no in golf, even more than breaking a rule. So I see zero chance he wins this week.
I don't know about all that. I mean, I think he can finish pretty well. I think that he has played more with the PXG clubs than perhaps he has let on, especially Golf Digest saying he's basically had a week to do it. I have a feeling he's probably been thinking about this for a while and has probably used some PXG equipment for a while privately, but certainly not on tour. It's tough to make an equipment switch anytime, and I completely understand. But for a guy who had T22, I think it was something like that, at the U.S. Open T7 at Firestone. So he's playing pretty good golf. It's kind of, I mean, these guys are so good. They could use a baseball bat and probably break 100. So I think that's not necessarily overblown, but it is something to keep an eye on. I don't think it necessarily kill him, but if it does, then obviously you look like a genius. The guy that I cannot win is Bubba Watson. he just always has such a bad attitude toward the major championships. Now, fortunately for him, that aren't the Masters, I should say, but fortunately for him, he is flying way under the radar. I feel like with the birth of the Big Four or Five or whatever, he is completely forgotten. He's still as long as ever, playing pretty good golf overall. I know he's not playing great golf by his standards, but I just don't think that he's always my kind of guy in this championship. No way he's going to win it.
Talking with Ryan Ballingy here. I can't believe that I'm saying this. It's interesting because I think the Greenbrier cancellation has kind of given this week a weird feel because we had no golf in this country to kind of lead in to the Open. Usually I have the sleeper, and I'm really proud to say that I have a sleeper, blah, blah, blah. I don't have anybody that I really have a conviction about. I would love to say Billy Hurley just because of how great that story is, but I think he's going to be more of an inconsistent recent winner than a consistent one. The only name that I really have is Lee Westwood, who finally seems like he's getting his act together. and obviously contended at the U.S. Open for a while before he blew up on the front nine on Sunday. Maybe this is finally his time.
It wouldn't be shocking. He was a part of the finish here in 2004. Him and Phil and Ernie, they all wound up losing to Todd Hamilton. Ernie got to the playoff. Ernie wouldn't be all that surprising. He had a nice showing at the Quicken Loans National. I think that would be an interesting choice. The guy that I like most as a sleeper is David Lingmert. He's like 125-1 right now, and no one is giving him any love whatsoever despite good finishes in both the U.S. Open and I think he was good at Firestone too, but his last two starts, I know the Open was one of them. He's been playing pretty good golf. I mean, he's a pretty good ball striker. He's Swedish, so he knows a little bit about the wind, knows how to handle that pretty okay. Can't see why he wouldn't, if he continues to strike the ball pretty well, he can handle this golf course pretty nicely. So if there's someone out of that contingent that's kind of the, hey, I've heard of that guy before contingent, David Lingmert is someone to look at. I would have said Andy Sullivan going into the week, but now he's been bet up from, I think it was 120 or 125-1 to now about 60-1. So he is a little bit of a long shot, but not nearly as long as he was maybe a few days ago, and certainly going into the championship before he played pretty well in his last couple of starts.
The PGA Tour, by the way, as we've been talking, posted an Instagram picture of Bubba signing autographs with the question, Bubba will finish what this week? And the comments are all over the place, from DQ to dead last to miscut to first. So Bubba, as we know, is a polarizing figure. All right. Time for that part of the show where I have to give a champion. It's hard to sway me away from saying Dustin Johnson. I just think he's showing really good form, and I think this would be, much like Jason Day needed to win the Canadian Open. You know, Jason Day was going to win a major, and I just think that the Canadian Open win just was that big, huge barrier breaker for him. I think that if there's a barrier left for Dustin Johnson, it may be this championship because of the out-of-bounds shot, much like I also think Rory's got a mental block on Augusta, and he's basically admitted as much himself. So it's hard to sway me away from Dustin, and Dustin is my pick.
I can't duplicate you, even though I would like to, but I like Adam Scott a lot this week. He's played the best golf in this championship in the last 5 years. Him and Dustin and Zach Johnson are the guys who've made the cut in the last 5 years. They're the only ones. So I know that he kind of got himself into the fringes of contention at the U.S. Open and then didn't really do anything with it, kind of fell backward. But I like him a lot this week. I just feel like he's, if you believe in karma, then what happened to him in 2012 is a travesty. And I think that he has a little bit of karma on his side for the Olympic stuff, because he told everybody way in advance that he wasn't going to play and he wasn't all that interested in it. And now that attention has shifted to people who decided to do it at the last minute. So maybe it all works out and the stars all align for Adam Scott.
We've got 60 seconds. And by the way, nice pick. Maybe this is his time to win this championship after the Ernie disappointment. We have not talked about Tiger Woods on the show, and thus I have to ask a Tiger question, and it's this. Will Charlie Woods parlay his T2 at that U.S. Kids event into bigger and better things?
Oh, I don't know. It's a nine-hole event. He shot, what, like 55 or something? I have a feeling his dad will help him, because he's going to be having a lot of time on his hands. I'll put it that way. I don't know anything for sure. I don't know anything for anybody. But I have a feeling Tiger's not going to be playing a whole lot of competitive golf from here on out. And if that's the case, then he gets to be a dad and help his son become maybe the best he can be. And if that's the case, look out. He's got some college scholarships pretty much probably on offer if he can figure out how to play golf.
Charlie's what, nine? Do you think he's the first ever nine-year-old to have a Nike endorsement contract?
If he wants to stay an amateur, he can't have that endorsement contract, and I'm sure Mike Davis is watching.
Sorry, Mike Davis. I did not want to get you involved. I'm sorry, Mike. Sorry. My fault. Mike Davis has enough on his hands right now.
Yeah, like Diana Murphy. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus Diana Murphy, who I don't know anybody who has had a worse summer in golf than Diana Murphy. I feel for her. I mean, this is the worst start to a USGA presidency you can probably think of.
Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, Walter Driver was bad, but he was bad from an internal politics standpoint. Even Tom O'Toole wasn't all that great, but at least he wasn't great privately. Diana Murphy may be a perfectly fine USGA president, but she cannot do public speaking for her life, and I don't know why. I have no insight as to why, but it's got to get cleaned up, at least before the US Senior Open, so somebody sees her not screw up a trophy presentation this year.
Thankfully for her, the U.S. Senior Open happens during the Olympics, so I think the amount of viewership may be lower than even the U.S. Senior Open normally gets, which would be good news for her because, you know, it would be less pressure.
She needs as clear a path to land that plane at the Senior Open as humanly possible.
Yeah, seriously. If you want to tweet with somebody, folks, at 3:30 in the morning tomorrow night, Ryan Ballingy will be the person to watch golf with and tweet with. He is Ryan Ballingy. Thank you, sir, for coming on, teeing it up to preview the Open Championship. And I will talk to you in 2 weeks, and I will talk to you 2 weeks after that.
All right, sounds good. Well, we've got a couple dates ahead of us then.
And then, if you really want, when the Barclays comes, I can talk to you again, and then when, like, you know, captain's picks for the Ryder Cup come, we can talk again, and then we'll talk at the Tour Championship, and then we'll talk at the Ryder Cup, and come October 1st, you'll be begging for, you know, freedom from me.
No, not at all. I always enjoy coming out and talking with you, so thank you for having me.
My pleasure. That is Ryan Ballingy. Enjoy the Open Championship on the networks of Golf Channel and NBC. Have a good night, everybody. See ya.